Welcome to the Bringing It to Life podcast series. This series looks at how practitioners and families can use the new National Best Practice Framework for Early Childhood Intervention. Our podcast today is being recorded on Jarjawarung country. We acknowledge the traditional custodians and recognise their continued connection to land, waters and community. We also pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Today's podcast is one of a series of conversations with families and practitioners from across Australia. We hope these conversations will help everyone understand what high-quality services and support looks like for children with developmental concerns, delay or disability, and how they can implement them in their practices every day.
Hello, my name's Kerry Bull and you're listening to the 10th episode in our series of Bringing It to Life National Best Practice Framework podcasts. Throughout our podcasts, you'll hear parents and practitioners discussing our framework principles and practices for children with developmental concerns, delay or disability, and what it looks like when it's working well. I've been really looking forward to today's podcast and I'm pleased to be welcoming three guests who are keen to talk with us about the importance of a community-focused approach that involves creating welcoming and inclusive community environments where children and their families feel valued and accepted, fostering a sense of belonging, supporting children with developmental concerns, delay or disability in their families requires a community-wide approach where individuals, families, community organisations, local government and services agencies work together to address the holistic needs of children and their families. Community-centred is one of the key principles of the National Best Practice Framework. So firstly, welcome to Kylie, a parent and trained peer leader from New South Wales, who's currently working on a range of really interesting projects in a not-for-profit organisation. Hi, Kylie.
Hi, Kerry. Thank you.
Great to have you here. And Hannah, who's trained in early childhood education and has worked in community, long daycare, primary schools and preschools in New South Wales, currently working for a not-for-profit and NDIS provider. Hi, Hannah.
Hi, Kerry. Thanks for having me.
And lastly, to Abby, who's here from remote Western Australia and is going to bring us a really important perspective for our conversation. Hi, Abby.
Hi, Kerry. Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. And we might hear from Hannah first. Do you mind getting us started, Hannah, by telling us about what a community-focused approach means to you?
Absolutely. That's a great starting point for what we're talking about today. Community-focused approach to me is about a sense of belonging, and everybody has the right to belong, and that I think we also need to acknowledge that every single person is different in every way, and the way that they feel that sense of belonging sits differently for them. So understanding each person and how they then feel that sense of community is really important for everyone working together, and seeing the strengths inside every person, because every person has a strength. In fact, most people have more than one. So if we focus on all of those strengths, we will be a wonderful community that sees each person as a person that adds value to the community.
So you're bringing a real strength-based approach to that too, Hannah. Thank you. And we might hear from Abby. Do you have different thoughts about a community approach?
Oh, I mean, I would agree with Hannah. From my experience in kind of working in a rural, remote area, that we really love building that strong local partnership within the community. So, you know, it's empowering not only family members but empowering other community members, finding out what's important to them and fostering that ongoing participation in the wider community and their culture. I think ultimately it comes down to co-design of services within the community, something that they can take ownership of and work holistically.
Yeah, absolutely. Can you tell me a little bit more about co-design, what you mean by that?
Yes, it's a very hot topic word around the tracks lately, but I really think on the ground level, it's sitting down with other service providers, important community members and things like that to work out what this service looks like, what are the important features, and really getting that feedback to how we deliver services to this community in a meaningful way that actually provides good outcomes for the community.
So you're really talking to me about building that sort of community connection. Yeah. Can you tell
Yes,
me a bit more about
definitely.
that, or give us any examples about how you support community connection?
Yeah, definitely. So within the program that I work in, we actually employ a local community member. We call them our family support workers. So they're a local who are based in the communities that we provide outreach to, and they are our key connection between families, community, other services, and our allied health team. So not only will it build knowledge and capacity of the individual family support worker, but it builds mutual trust between the organisations we work with, and trust between family members and us, because, you know, if a local community member is part of our team, then they can be assured that their needs are being met in a way that fosters belonging.
It's such an important component of belonging in a community-focused approach, isn't it? This word trust.
Yes, definitely. And I find it just provides a bit more ownership in the outcomes of the program, that you're not an outsider coming in telling people what they need, what they should be doing, and what goals they should be working on. It's that collaborative goal setting within.
The essence of co-design again. Yeah. Thanks,
Yeah.
Abby. You've helped us understand all of that. We might turn to you, Kylie. First, can you tell us about your role? You're a trained peer leader. What does that mean?
Yeah, thank you, Kerry. So I am a trained peer leader, but I'm first a mum. So I'm a mum of two neurodivergent children, and my youngest, he has a disability and is on the NDIS. My oldest is not on the NDIS, but she too needs support. And so a peer worker is a person who is trained to work with people they have a similar lived experience to. So I work with families because I am a family and I have similar lived experience raising children with disability and developmental concerns. So I've also been trained in family leadership as well. So it's not just training in different programs, but it's to be a family leader and to take that role as leading and supporting my own family, first of all, and then other families in the community, and to create more of a peer worker team as well. I just was thinking about something Abby said around co-design and collaboration. It just makes me think of that saying, nothing about us without us. You know, and I really feel that we need to listen to the voices of people with disability, of children with disability and their families, because really it is a collaboration and co-design that has to be done with all of the stakeholders that are involved. And so I really loved that you were talking about that, Abby.
I love that you talk about family leader. It's just such a strong title for a role. That's terrific to hear. But go on, Kylie.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, I just wanted to add around that sense of belonging and how being a part of something bigger than ourselves is so important. And, you know, our families and our children deserve to feel that way. It's really going to lead to their greater learning and their well-being. And also, we know all the research tells us that it also builds resilience amongst us to be a part of a community. They really ensure that we are connected to others, and that connectedness really can bring out the best outcomes. You know, Hannah talked about coming from a strengths approach, and I really feel like being connected and that sense of belonging is a strength. And I feel that trained peer workers really offer a bridge between. I think, Abby, you talked about key connectors. You know, they really are able to give that lived experience, but also because of that training, be able to collaborate both with professionals and with families and with people with disability.
I'm interested to hear all three of you use this word belonging. I'm sure we'll come back to that. Kylie, do you want to talk any more about why you think a connected community is important for children and their families from a parent perspective?
Yeah, I just know that as a parent, you often feel isolated and overwhelmed at the beginning of your journey. And because of the deficit-based model around trying to get services and funding, we often can feel that we keep going into a hole, and to navigate our way through that can be really tricky and challenging, many barriers along the way. So I think as soon as you feel the community are on your side, that the community can help guide you, the community can help lead you and include your children, your family, then you start to see pathways, and those pathways create hope. So I think we need more of those pathways in our communities. It's really important that we have many different opportunities to connect and belong to our community, and that our community is the one that are leading and making those opportunities for our families.
Thank you, Kylie. Thank you. We might go to you, Hannah. You and the organisation you work with have an interest in better understanding family connection to community. How have you gone about learning from families of children with disability about being part of their community? And just what are some of the key things that you've learned?
I think one of the biggest key things is to never assume, to always ask, and to ask the people that this is impacting. Our organisation created a national survey to survey families with young children under 14 years about how they felt included in the community. And what came back was that 91% of families wanted to be more included in the community. And this is a huge cry out for them. And from this survey, we were able to understand some of the barriers that were preventing this inclusion that the families were feeling. And those were things that were like two highlights of them were environmental, so the lighting and the sound of the different environments that they're going to, but also the attitudes of other people in the community was a really big barrier for not understanding them and their place in the community as well. So that paradigm shift and that the ways of thinking, so making sure that the community are also prepared for families to come out into and have that sense of belonging. I think belonging is such an important word. I mean, the early learning years framework with being, belonging and becoming, and belonging is where it all starts. You can't learn until you belong. I think it's so valuable, and I think that making sure that everybody understands that sense of belonging is one of the places to start, so that the attitudes of stigma or discriminations that might be there can kind of lessen from what results we got, so that families then come out. And they have to be really brave again to come out, because if you've experienced discrimination, to then actually go back out into the community again is a really brave step for you to take, because you could be really anxious about that and it might prevent you from going out again and testing different things.
Yeah. Hannah, can you build on that a little bit more for us and tell us about, given what you learned from that survey, what did you then do about it? What are some of the programs, community-focused emphasis, have you put in place?
So our organisation already has a program for libraries to make libraries a more inclusive space for children with disabilities and developmental delays. So with that, we've developed a free online training for librarians to do. Over 1,000 people have engaged in the course, which is wonderful. It's about 10% of librarians. We're trying really hard to get it higher and higher, because we're hearing that it is such a community connector place where so many young children go to with their parents or their grandparents, that for them to be turned away or not feel that sense of belonging, that just starts this path of segregation. And so people not feeling that sense of belonging in the community. One of the peer workers that worked on this training with us said that she went to the library and her child started to have a little meltdown inside the thing, and she just felt flustered and she just wanted to get out of the library when this happened. And I think many of us as parents have experienced that, whether we have neurodivergent children or neurotypical children, all children will have these moments. And what meant the most to her was the librarian looked at her when she was leaving and says, "I hope to see you next week." And to her, that made her have that sense of belonging, that it's okay for her to be here. And she didn't have to be brave to go back to the library. She was welcomed back into the library.
Carly, I might turn to you, because you, like Hannah, are working in an organisation that's doing really fabulous work in supporting the community in Sydney to be a welcoming place for children with disability. Do you want to tell us more about the library program or any other work that you're doing in that space?
Yeah, thanks, Kerry. I've been very fortunate to work on quite a few projects, and over this time with different projects that have been funded under the ILC grants, I've really been able to talk to a lot of families Over 1,200 families, in fact, in just a few years. So, really hearing from families, so not just in our surveys, but actually over the phone, through text messaging and emailing, I've been able to connect and speak to the families. And what we're just hearing through the surveys and through talking to them and being in sessions with them is that families really do need to feel a welcomeness to be feeling like they belong. So they need to be given opportunities and they need modelling of that belonging. They need it to be able to be seen what it looks like so that they don't feel overwhelmed and don't and won't come back. We want them to come back and be a part of it so their children have those opportunities to thrive. And I feel that coming from a very strong base with families, giving them many opportunities where they can connect in, not just in one area. One of the things we did recently in one of our projects was something called Photo Voice. And it was just such a beautiful way to see children's choices of what they think is interesting and fun for them. And so we sat and prepared the families about what they would be doing with their child, and their child took a camera into their community and they took pictures of things that they felt were really interesting and fun for them. And then we could give that information, we could share that information then with the rest of the community, with those people that are in the libraries as well, the library staff. And then the library staff could also show us pictures of what they found were really valuable and interesting. So it's just one way of being able to hear the voice and hear what families and children are wanting and saying. And we got some really creative results back from the children, you can imagine. But it was just a really lovely way of hearing back from them. The other thing we've been very fortunate to do with the library staff is we have been able to talk directly to them, been hosting some wonderful workshops around making sensory friendly environments, around being able to ask a parent, peer worker anything so that they can also talk about their experience and what other families have been saying. And just to keep that communication really open. So it is a true collaboration and a conversation that will just continue to be had. And I think that's been quite profound throughout the project as well.
Thank you. What a rich project that is. It sounds a fabulous piece to be working on. Thanks for that. I'm going to come to you, Hannah, in a moment because I want to hear more about that, about the effectiveness of it. But Abby, I wonder if we go to you just to say, have you got any comments about that from a rural, remote perspective, building on the sort of thinking about community?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you that I love the sound of it all. And it's something that I see reflected within the communities that we work in is that kind of sense of shame in accessing services or sense of shame, like you said, going somewhere and your child not behaving in the particular way that they're supposed to behave. And it's something that we really like to work with families on that, capacity build with family members and capacity build with other community members about, there is no shame in accessing services and there is no shame of going to these welcoming environments. We're not going to judge you for things like that. You're always welcome despite, what any kid can have a meltdown at any point in time, like you were suggesting. So I really love that concept because it's something that we do see reflected in communities that people are embarrassed to access services and get that help.
You mentioned then about capacity building of parents, of families, but also the capacity building of the community to enable the community to be the welcoming place that you're all talking about.
Yeah, definitely. We do try to do a lot of that work with whoever is important with the children that we work with in their life, whether that's teachers, childcare educators, auntie, uncle, cousins, whoever is important, whoever is there. And it's building that capacity and understanding that, that this is not a reflection upon the child itself. This is what neurotypical children might present as, and this is ways we can support that. And I think it was Kylie, you were mentioning the libraries making that sensory friendly spaces. So yeah, trying to work alongside them about how we can make this environment more welcoming and inclusive for every kid.
Thanks, Abby. Hannah, can I ask you a little bit more about the library program and Photo Voice and other work that you're doing? How do you know its effectiveness?
There are many ways to measure this, and I think that it's on all fronts because it's about library staff and about how effective it's been for them, and then for how then and that's landed for the parents that are attending and taking their children along, or carers that are taking their children along, and then how it's landing for the children as well. So the effectiveness is not just in one area, it's encompassing all. So we try and measure that by getting stories of change from parents. We introduce that photo voice to get the understanding from children and their response to that. And then the training as well that we've offered, we had 100% of people who have done the training feel an uplift in capacity in working with children with disabilities and developmental delays, so added confidence. And I think that that's a great shift for the library staff to have. Like I said, it's only 10% of library staff have this training. We're hoping to get it higher. But the more that get it and the more that really feel that they feel more confident with it, I'm confident that the environment will then be welcoming for everyone. Like what Abby says, is it's welcoming, like it's about the welcome, and that sense of belonging comes from the people who are in it welcoming them and saying it's okay to be like that. We've had a library change their rhyme time to wiggle and giggle time so that they can squirm, and it's not just about being quiet inside a library, to make it more accessible for people. So changing that language to make it more supportive so that families are like, oh, I can go now, and just making an environment welcoming. And going back to the national survey that we did, what came from it was inclusion starts with welcome. And so when we have a welcomed environment, that means that families have that ability to feel that they can choose where they would like to be in the community. Would they like to join a sports team? Would they like to do a music program or an art program, or go down on the playground equipment that, you know, is there for everyone, make them feel welcome?
So really opening opportunities for children and families to participate, engage. Yep.
I would even add to all those wonderful things Hannah said is that, you know, the free training that we have online, we actually know that this could be supportive to other communities, not just to libraries. So, you know, it's something that other organisations could use, sporting clubs could use. It could be used for allied health practitioners or, you know, early childhood practitioners, therapists. It can also be used by our councils and policymakers. So we do have some foundations in there that are just universal and can be used and learnt by everybody, and certainly any new staff that were coming in. And I think what Hannah said about that increased confidence, that was a really quick and early outcome that we could see that libraries staff were saying back to us, and the language. And one of the things I remember one of the library staff saying to me is, I didn't know if it was okay to approach a family and talk to them about that, you know, talk to them about their child. And, you know, and I said, it's always good to make no assumption, but we always want to assume a competence. But at the same time, you know, it's great to say what you're observing, you know, and say how much energy the child has or how fascinated they are with the texture and the look of things. And, you know, it's really nice to connect, because it's rapport building. And when you're paying attention to someone's child, it's going to lift them up as well. So it adds to that sense of welcome and belonging, I think, for families. And families really have told us that they really do feel welcome when a library staff or when people in those community places come in and actually connect in and make that effort straight away to feel welcoming, wherever that community space might be.
Thank you, Kylie. Thank you. Abby, I'm wondering then, given all of this, we've heard about belonging so strongly here, but what are some of the other essential ingredients that enable community engagement to be successful?
I mean, I think it's working within the existing community services and spaces. I don't think that we necessarily have to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes I think we can go out into the community and see what's there and work with them. You know, that shared decision making and developing a really true working partnership with those. You know, whether that's through community consultation, individual one-on-one, and again, the key word of co-design, whether it's that full co-design process. I think it's also very important to build the capacity of those services and local community members as well, because especially for our program, when we're not there all the time, where, you know, we drive in, fly in for short periods of time, if we don't build that capacity, then there is no gains to be made.
Abby, have you got anything you'd like to contribute in terms of when we know when a community-focused approach is working well?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree entirely in just sharing that excitement of when you do go out in community and you've been doing that work and then you change environments and you see the change within that. Is it the language? Is it that we walk into a classroom and a teacher already has their sensory friendly modifications in place or, different strategies already in place and you're like, oh, wow, this like it does seem so little to other people, but it's a massive change from what we've been experiencing as well. So I think it's really nice to celebrate those little wins like that, because it does lead to the bigger picture. And yeah, I guess when it's working well, I think we see more and more of that. And like they mentioned, more people asking questions, more people seeking support and also information, how can I do what I'm doing now in a better way? Is there something that I can, not that they're doing anything wrong, but how can I be more welcoming? How can I be more inclusive and really focus on this family or the child or the community as a whole? I guess bringing that all together, it's a confident and supportive community members. I really love seeing the change from someone who is, a bit nervous in asking these questions to become a confident supporter of their community and they really advocate.
I would just like to say that I think we're starting to see more responsiveness and more equitable environments where families are starting to comment on those things as well as the services and the communities that are involved. And just like Abby was saying, about when you come into a space and all of a sudden you feel you don't have to advocate, that they're just doing it, that it's just happening. And when, as a parent, when I don't have to advocate, that is like a whew, full relief, to be able to feel that way. And I had one of those little moments this morning when I walked into my son's classroom. So that was really awesome. But also, I just think of the words of one of our library staff, it's in one of the pilots at the beginning of the project, and she said, inclusion is no longer an option. And that's the truth of it. In our community, inclusion is just a part of the diverse community that we all live in, and it's something that we need to embrace.
Hannah, would you like to say any final words?
I really like that community focused has come into the framework principles and that it's there because that is a massive change as well for just everybody being aware and thinking about it and understanding that we all have a role and responsibility in the community because we're all participants and we can all help make this change come together. And so I think that that's where we see change happening.
Yeah, I think it is an important part of the framework too. Community-focused approach is really being addressed now. Thank you all so much for your contribution today. It's been really enriching. Thanks for your time and expertise.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thanks,
Bye-bye.
Carrie. Thanks, Carrie.
Kylie, Abby, and Hannah provided us with fabulous examples of how connected communities share the responsibility of ensuring that all children can participate in community activities. This includes cultural, recreational, social, and educational activities, as well as community activities where children engage with their peers and other families. For example, at local parks, playgrounds, and libraries. I think you'll find the accompanying podcast on teamwork interesting, along with the podcast on participation and everyday settings.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of the podcast series for the new National Best Practice Framework for Early Childhood Intervention. The University of Melbourne acknowledges the contributions of its collaborators in developing this material for the framework, which was commissioned by the Department of Social Services. Collaborators include Healthy Trajectories, the Melbourne Disability Institute, Strong Kids, Strong Future, professionals and researchers in early childhood intervention, the Murdoch Children's Research Institute, SNAKE, National Voice for Our Children, Children and Young People with Disability Australia, and ACD, Advocating for Children with a Disability. The podcast content was produced by Precy. The work is copyrighted to the University of Melbourne under a Creative Commons licence. Credit must be given to the creator. Only non-commercial use is permitted, and no derivatives or adaptations are permitted. This material contains or draws upon Indigenous cultural and intellectual property contributed by SNAKE, National Voice for Our Children, and its staff, and is used with their consent. Dealing with any part of the materials containing Indigenous cultural and intellectual property for any purpose that has not been authorised by the custodians is a serious breach of customary laws. You must handle the Indigenous cultural and intellectual property accordingly when exercising the Creative Commons licence. Thank you for listening.